Castration had been less painful than he had imagined, and, he had learned, far more common. Every year, thousands of men underwent surgical gelding, orchiectomy, as the process was known. Their motivations ranging from transgender issues to curbing sexual addictions to deep-seated spiritual beliefs. For Malach, the reasons were of the highest nature, like the mythological self-castrated Attis. Malach knew that achieving immortality required a clean break with the material world of male and female. The androgyne is one. Nowadays, eunuchs were shunned, although the ancients understood the inherent power of this transmutational sacrifice. Even the early Christians had heard Jesus himself extol its virtues in Matthew 19:12. There are those who have made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. He who is able to accept this, let him accept it. Peter Solomon had made a flesh sacrifice, although a single hand was a small price in the grand scheme. By night's end, however, Solomon would be sacrificing much, much more. In order to create, I must destroy. Such was the nature of polarity. Peter Solomon, of course, deserved the fate that awaited him tonight. It would be a fitting end. Long ago, he had played the pivotal role in Malach's mortal life path. For this reason, Peter had been chosen to play the pivotal role in Malach's great transformation. This man had earned all the horror and pain he was about to endure. Peter Solomon was not the man the world believed he was. He sacrificed his own son. Peter Solomon had once presented his son, Zachary, with an impossible choice: wealth or wisdom. Zachary chose poorly. The boy's decision had begun a chain of events that eventually dragged the young man into the depths of hell. Soganluk prison. Zachary Solomon had died in that Turkish prison. The whole world knew the story. But what they didn't know was that Peter Solomon could have saved his son. I was there, Malach thought. I heard it all. Malach had never forgotten that night. Solomon's brutal decision had meant the end of his son Zach, but it had been the birth of Malach. Some must die that others may live. As the light over Malach's head began changing color again, he realized the hour was late. He completed his preparations and headed back up the ramp. It was time to attend to matters of the mortal world. Chapter 87. All is revealed at the 33rd degree, Catherine thought as she ran. I know how to transform the pyramid. The answer had been right in front of them all night. Catherine and Langdon were alone now, dashing through the cathedral's annex, following signs for the Garth. Now, exactly as the dean had promised, they burst out of the cathedral into a massive walled-in courtyard. The cathedral Garth was a cloistered pentagonal garden with a bronze postmodern fountain. Catherine was amazed how loudly the fountain's flowing water seemed to be reverberating in the courtyard. Then she realized it was not the fountain she was hearing. Helicopter! She shouted as a beam of light pierced the night sky above them. Get under that portico! The dazzling glare of a searchlight flooded the Garth just as Langdon and Catherine reached the other side, slipping beneath a Gothic arch into a tunnel that led to the outside lawn. They waited, huddled in the tunnel, as the helicopter passed overhead and began circling the cathedral in wide arcs. I guess Galloway was right about hearing visitors, Catherine said, impressed. Bad eyes make for great ears. Her own ears now pounded rhythmically with her racing pulse. This way, Langdon said, clutching his daybag and moving through the passage. Dean Galloway had given them a single key and a clear set of directions. Unfortunately, when they reached the end of the short tunnel, they found themselves separated from their destination by a wide open expanse of lawn, currently flooded with light from the helicopter overhead. We can't get across, Catherine said. Hold on. Look. Langdon pointed to a black shadow that was materializing on the lawn to their left. The shadow began as an amorphous blob, but it was growing quickly, moving in their direction, becoming more defined, rushing at them faster and faster, stretching and finally transforming itself into a massive black rectangle crowned by two impossibly tall spires. The cathedral facade is blocking the searchlight, Langdon said. They're landing out in front. Langdon grabbed Catherine's hand. Run, now! Inside the cathedral, Dean Galloway felt a lightness in his step that he had not felt in years. He moved through the great crossing, down the nave toward the narthex and the front doors. He could hear the helicopter hovering in front of the cathedral now, and he imagined its lights coming through the rose window in front of him, throwing spectacular colors all over the sanctuary. He recalled the days when he could see color. Ironically, the lightless void that had become his world had illuminated many things for him. I see more clearly now than ever. Galloway had been called to God as a young man, and over his lifetime had loved the church as much as any man could. Like many of his colleagues who had given their lives in earnest to God, Galloway was weary. He had spent his life straining to be heard above the din of ignorance. What did I expect? From the Crusades to the Inquisition to American politics, the name Jesus had been hijacked as an ally in all kinds of power struggles. Since the beginning of time, the ignorant had always screamed the loudest, hurting the unsuspecting masses and forcing them to do their bidding. They defended their worldly desires by citing scripture they did not understand. They celebrated their intolerance as proof of their convictions. Now, after all these years, mankind had finally managed to utterly erode everything that had once been so beautiful about Jesus. Tonight, encountering the symbol of the Rose Cross had fueled him with great hope, reminding him of the prophecies written in the Rosicrucian manifestos, which Galloway had read countless times in the past and could still recall. Chapter 1. Jehovah will redeem humanity by revealing those secrets which he previously reserved only for the elect. Chapter 4. The whole world shall become as one book, and all the contradictions of science and theology shall be reconciled. Chapter 7. Before the end of the world, God shall create a great flood of spiritual light to alleviate the suffering of humankind. Chapter 8. Before this revelation is possible, the world must sleep away the intoxication of her poisoned chalice, which was filled with the false life of the theological vine. Galloway knew the church had long ago lost her way, and he had dedicated his life to writing her course. Now he realized the moment was fast approaching. It is always darkest before the dawn. CIA field agent Turner Simpkins was perched on the strut of the Sikorsky helicopter as it touched down on the frosty grass. He leaped off, joined by his men, and immediately waved the chopper back up into the air to keep an eye on all the exits. Nobody leaves this building. As the chopper rose back into the night's